This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, listener. Dahlia Lithwick here, host of Amicus, that Slate's podcast on the courts and the law and democracy and the rule of law. This May, our team will be publishing a special project that we are calling How Originalism Ate the Law. This neutral and academic-sounding methodology of looking at the law is, in fact, anything but neutral. Originalism is to the conservative legal movement what peanut butter is to jelly. As we're going to show you over the course of this project, originalism has been both cover and calling for conservative justices and judges to radically overhaul the lives of millions of Americans. And while they claim to be the apolitical interpreters of the Constitution and its author's intents, they have overturned Roe, radically expanded gun rights, and eviscerated voting rights. Across Slate.com and the Amicus podcast, we're going to be tackling questions like, where did originalism come from? Why has it taken over? Are progressive originalists really a thing? And am I allowed to have an opinion on originalism? Spoiler, the answer to that last question, you are. To celebrate the launch of this big project, we are running a special two-week-long free trial of Slate Plus on Apple Podcasts. As a member, you'll get exclusive episodes from How Originalism Ate the Law, plus ad-free listening to all of your favorite Slate podcasts. Join now by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen.
On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough. This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
The XX Gabfest is brought to you by MeUndies. MeUndies makes the world's most comfortable underwear in a variety of styles and patterns. Head to MeUndies.com/XX to get free shipping and 20% off your first order. And by Headspace. If you've ever been curious about meditation, then go to Headspace.com/XX and try the Take 10 program. It's guided meditation for 10 days, 10 minutes a day, absolutely free. Give it a try at headspace.com/XX. And by HelloFresh, the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new, delicious recipes complete with step-by-step instructions that are designed to take around 30 minutes to prepare. For $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter XX when you subscribe.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to the XX Gabfest for Thursday, February 11th, the Bernie Bros edition. I'm Hannah Rosen, a host of NPR's Invisibilia. I'm joined in the New York studios by June Thomas, editor of Outward, Slate's LGBTQ blog. Hi, June.
Hey, Hannah.
And Noreen Malone of New York Magazine. Hi, Noreen.
Hi, Hannah.
So were you guys up late last night watching, we're recording this, by the way, right after the New Hampshire primaries. Did you guys watch any of the concession speeches? Like, it was amazing how they called it, like, the millisecond after it was over. Like he Wolf Blitzer could hardly wait for that countdown. He was like, I have information that you don't know.
I think there were still people voting, right? I saw on Twitter there was one guy still, like, the last voter after they'd locked the doors, sort of sadly there.
You know, that's like, so what Twitter is for, to capture like the one guy still voting.
I was couldn't believe Bernie's victory speech. And I confess I did turn away from New Hampshire to watch NCIS because priorities, people. And when I turned back, I swear Bernie was still talking. It was like a half hour speech. I mean, doesn't that seem a little bit excessive?
It was described as gracious, like the media liked it. You know, they do talk, those guys, they do talk. I had that same experience with Trump where like I watched Trump. I left Trump to watch Samantha Bee. I went back to Trump. He's still talking. All right. I haven't even said what topics we're talking about yet. Okay. Our three topics. The Bernie brothers, who are the sexist bastards who spiel over Hillary's social media page. Or maybe they don't. Maybe they don't even exist. We will discuss. The second is the CDC's fine recommendation telling women of childbearing age not to drink because they might one day get pregnant and cause their fetus to have fetal alcohol syndrome. And third, Samantha Bee has her own late night talk show. It's been much praised and we will discuss. Okay, Bernie brothers.
Bernie Bros.
I keep reading it as brothers, like, because I'm tired. The Bernie Bros. Did you, when you were watching Bernie's victory speech, like, in that room, were you secretly looking like, that guy might be a bro? Because you knew we were going to talk about it. Like, that guy with the beard, because in New Hampshire, there's lots of guys with, like, lumberjack beardy kind of situations who might be hipsters or might be just, like, New Hampshire people. You can't tell. Yeah.
Well, should we first define what a Bernie bro is?
Yeah. Okay. Define what a Bernie bro is instead of me giving my like official thing. You can define it.
As I understand it, a Bernie bro is an ardent supporter of Bernie Sanders who happens to be in most cases, a youngish man who cannot stop talking about his ardent support of Bernie Sanders. And so in some cases, this becomes sort of a violent, like, social media presence where all you want to say is you're wrong if you don't get why Bernie is the best.
Oh, I didn't understand it that way. I thought it was like whose anger kind of collectively tips into sexism. Like they get heated up and then they start saying sexist things on Hillary's Facebook page about like you women who vote with their vaginas. Well, like I thought it had to be sexist in order for you to be a Bernie bro.
That's not how it originally started, I believe, in the canonical text on the Atlantic's website by Robinson Meyer, like only 4 months ago.
Doesn't that seem like such a lot? When I was reading that, people are like, oh my God, he did this back in October? Like that was another era.
I think that's one sort of way in which the Bernie bros ardor spills over, unfortunately, is that a number of them do appear to have taken a real sexist tack on, you know, if you support Hillary Clinton, you must be, you know, voting with your vagina, to be crude about it, as many of them are.
Okay, enough with that. Okay, so did you troll a little bit of the Bernie, like the kinds of comments, and have any feeling about them?
I mean,
no.
It's not really. It's like, this seems like the kind of thing you'd have to be a little bit masochistic to seek out. I mean, it seems that many women who have written about their experience of writing about Hillary and then having been trolled by Bernie bros. Like, there's lots of evidence like that. You know, Joan Walsh, for example, who's writing now for The Nation, wrote a piece for them about why, like, officially coming out as a Hillary supporter. And one of the things that she talked about was how anytime she writes about Hillary or even tweets about Hillary, she gets really misogynistic responses from, I think she called them Bernie bot keyboard warriors. But the people
less catchy.
Less catchy. The people we know more catchily as Bernie bros.
I guess this is the situation where, like, you wonder, the sexism in the last time Hillary ran was so overt in 1950s, you know, like the incidents that stand out were go home and iron a shirt, you know, stuff like that. Or is she going to cry? Or, you know, is she going to cry when she, you know, when she has to negotiate with foreign dictators or whatever? And now it's just moved online. It's like I was kind of wondering where it was and it just migrated online, right? Like now it's like you're sexist if you're pro Hillary, you're a traitor if you don't vote for Hillary, you're a bro if you attack Hillary. Isn't that just what happened?
I mean, I think it did happen, but I'm not sure it's just what happened. I mean, like if you look at what I think maybe there definitely a lot of stuff has gone online, and there is this culture of outrage that we've talked about many times and calling out blah, blah, blah. But I think also there's just like this weird way that things, it's become okay to say so many things are not okay, but it's kind of cool if you can get away with it. Like the way that Trump recently, somebody in the audience called Cruz a pussy, and then Trump kind of referred to it and kind of got to say it himself. And like that, I mean, first of all, it's Trump, yeah, who's changing what's acceptable and what's not completely bananas. But like that would have been something that would have been an online comment a few years ago. And now it's like actually referred to on pretty much every news.
Yeah, the New York Times printed the word pussy, which I think was a milestone for America, you know?
A milestone for cat lovers everywhere.
So back to the Bernie bros. So when we talked about Bernie and Hillary Clinton a few weeks ago on the podcast, we did get a lot of letters telling us that we had, you know, been a little flip in our dismissal of Bernie. And I have to say that all but maybe one or two came from men. Not sexist at all, not, you know, nothing, no, very reasonable, very, you know, you ignored the issues kind of thing. But it did strike me that it was so many men writing in. And then you look at the poll numbers in Iowa and New Hampshire, and, you know, from this media narrative, from what we're all talking about, you would think that only men support Bernie Sanders. It turns out that, like, I think it's 87% of women under 30 in, or maybe it was 25. I should look that up. Anyway, whatever. 87% of young women supported Bernie over Hillary in New Hampshire, which is crazy high. Mm-hmm. And that's what's super interesting to me. So the whole narrative is about how Bernie supporters are total sexists. But actually, young women, it just is an age thing. And young women are for Bernie, too. And maybe not all of them are quite as aggressive in their proselytizing. But they obviously, Bernie speaks to them more than Hillary, which I think is super interesting.
Mm-hmm. And in walks Gloria Steinem to say the most insane thing about that very point you just made. Like, the most insane thing. Like, what was she thinking? Let's listen to what Gloria Steinem actually said.
First of all, I mean, she does have a huge gender gap and race gap. I mean,
huge.
Yeah, women are more for her than men are, and she has...
But not younger women.
The black...
They're more for Bernie.
It depends where you ask, but I do think
America.
That Bernie... No.
No, really. In America, no, I mean,
it doesn't,
it's just true.
I mean, first of all, women get more radical as we get older because we experience...
Women get more radical.
Yeah, it's the
That's
opposite. It's the opposite of... You know, I don't mean to overgeneralize. I'm sure that you're getting more radical. But, but men
right.
tend to get more conservative because they gain power as they age, and women
right.
get more radical because they lose power
wow.
as they age.
Isn't that
so it's kind of not fair to measure most women by the standard of most men because they're going to get more activist as they grow older. And when you're young, you're thinking, you know, where are the boys? The boys are with Bernie or, you know.
Ooh. Now, if I said that.
No.
Yeah, they're for Bernie because that's where the boys
no,
are.
No,
you'd,
but,
you'd
but it's
swap
not.
Me. Come
no,
on.
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't because the boys are saying whether. No, I mean, hello.
So obviously, the thing about the girls want to be with the boys for Bernie is totally insulting. But the stuff she said beforehand about how women tend to get more radical as they age, probably particularly around gender issues, I thought was pretty interesting. And certainly, I think has been true in my own life. I was trying to figure out why young women just seem so like Hillary doesn't matter to them. Her gender doesn't matter to them. And in 2008, I was 23 and Hillary's gender didn't matter to me. And I'm not like that much older now, but I am older and I have seen the way gender matters in the workplace. And I think I'm a little more hardened. Now, that doesn't mean that I care about I actually think that I share with these younger women the idea that I don't need a representation of myself in office, particularly that I would rather, you know, vote on the issues and who I think will be the better president, blah, blah, blah. But I do think that people are losing sight of what Steinem said, which I think is a real part of why, you know, just supporting Hillary for the sake of the fact that her name is Hillary doesn't matter to young women.
Okay, I want to ask our intern, Shiva, who's a real-life young person, what, and also a real-life female, what her friends say about Hillary and Bernie. Because my daughter, who's in high school and therefore can't vote, says that everyone in her school is pro-Bernie. She's not, and her best friend is not, but everyone in her school is, for the most part. So, Shiva, can you tell me? Hi, Shiva.
Hi.
As a representative of all the young people in the world,
in
the
America,
young females... In America and in college? No, I honestly, like, you're in college right now, right? No, you're in graduate school.
I just graduated from a master's program.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
So of your friends, can you just give me the general read on the Bernie Hillary? Your women friends.
So my female friends, me included, we all identify as feminists, and we believe that a woman should be in office, but we don't believe it should be Hillary.
Anyone but Hillary?
It is obviously time for a woman, but we just don't think that Hillary is the one that represents our interests.
Because she's like too establishment. Does she feel like your mom's candidate? Like, what's the actual problem? She's just not radical enough?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, especially in my circle of friends, we're concerned with, you know, foreign policy. We feel like she's too hawkish. She does represent kind of a different generation that is very establishment, that is kind of pro-bank, that is a little kind of like uptight. But does
that mean they're into Bernie, or they just are not that attached to Hillary?
I think I have some friends that are working in the Bernie Sanders campaign. And so, yeah, everyone is, all of my friends are Bernie supporters. And I think that his ideas on economic justice are something that really resonate with a lot of my friends who are kind of like insecure in the job market and kind of more activist leaning. And so his platform really speaks to a lot of us.
I think this is really interesting because the narrative that we hear all the time about young people is that all they care about are identity politics and all they want is a reflection of themselves. And this sort of, you know, bursts that balloon a little bit. Like, the economy appears to be what is most compelling to young voters about this election. That's what they're thinking about the most. They don't necessarily need to see a reflection of themselves in the presidency. It's so interesting that identity politics just so often is thought to be the only thing that young people care about, and it clearly is not.
Also, Gloria Steinem's use of the word radical, like, what would be more radical, supporting Bernie or supporting Hillary? It seems totally not that clear in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it also is kind of like the old left argument that, you know, class trumps gender, that, you know, the guy always sweeps in and says, well, you know, you don't focus on the subgroup, focus on the struggle of everyone, which I'm sure she was very familiar with as part of the left in the 70s.
Okay, as the oldest person here, I mean, clearly I feel like I'm certainly not anywhere close to Gloria Steinem's age, but I guess I'm closer to her. And I do feel like I have a sense not only of that reflexive, come on now, it's time for a woman, I don't want to be waiting anymore, how long do you want me to wait kind of thing. But also, I do think from my own life, I know that another thing that happens as I got older, I don't know if it's universal, is that I became less idealistic. You know, in many ways, certainly I grew up in Britain. I was a raving socialist, and that was perfectly normal. But as I came over here, perhaps became more, you know, conservative because of America. But also, I feel like one of the things that's keeping me from being a supporter of Bernie, even though his policies are really pretty much in line with my beliefs, more so than what Hillary espouses, is this whole notion of, well, is he electable? Which, you know, certainly came up in 2008. People were saying, oh, you know, why would you have a black guy as your candidate? People won't have a vote for a black president. And they did. But a 74-year-old Jewish socialist from Vermont, do people really think that that is an electable candidate?
In Obama's America, we do. No, I mean, the reality is that Hillary Clinton is actually ahead if you if you look at the electoral votes, like she probably will get the nomination. But I have to say, I have found it really exciting that there are people who are idealistic. It's not just young people. Like my parents are all about Bernie these days.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And to me, it's like the democratic process at work, to be totally earnest about it, is that he's going to push her to the left. He's already doing it. She's already, you know, she's her message has been pushed to the left. She's had to figure out, okay, where are ways I can beat Bernie? One way is like she can talk about issues of race in this country. She went to Flint. She's already sort of reversing, you know, in 2008, when she went to South Carolina, there were some mildly, you know, sort of dog whistly things on race that the Clinton campaign did. And now she's doing them in the opposite direction. She's the champion of minorities in this country. Like she is, you know, she's remapping her candidacy around Bernie Sanders. And that's exciting.
Okay, let's leave it at that. The race is exciting in many, many ways. Shiva, thanks for joining us for the conversation.
Thank you.
All right, let's move on to our second topic. But before we do, let's thank our sponsor.
This episode of the XX Gabfest is brought to you by MeUndies. It's almost Valentine's Day. You don't want to be super predictable and bring flowers or chocolate.
That would be horrible.
That would be horrible. Flowers or chocolate are just a thing a woman never wants to see in her life, you know? So instead, show your special someone how much you care with MeUndies, the world's most comfortable underwear. So MeUndies are made of something called micromodal fabric, which I don't quite know what it is, but I just know they're very soft. In fact, twice as soft as cotton. And they don't just feel great, they look great too. They come in tons and tons of cool prints and styles. And every month you can get a new design, so it's not just boring old black or white or nude. In February, in fact, there is a design by Keith Haring, which is pretty cool. It's a limited edition. It's a retro design inspired by love, which makes it good for Valentine's Day when you are avoiding those flowers and chocolate and getting to the point and getting your sweetheart some underwear. So MeUndies has a keep it for free guarantee. If you don't fall in love with your first pair, keep them and you'll get your money back. No questions asked. So to really win Valentine's Day, you want to go to MeUndies.com/XX and you can get free shipping and 20% off your first order. That's MeUndies.com/XX for free shipping and 20% off your first order of the world's most comfortable underwear. All right, back to the show.
All right, let's move on to that CDC report. The CDC released a report warning that women who are sexually active, not using birth control, and drinking risk exposing a fetus to fetal alcohol syndrome. This, they said, is true whether or not the woman is trying to get pregnant, and a lot of outrage rightly ensued. I got to say, I spent a lot of the time trying to figure out, like, what's up with the CDC when I was researching. Like, literally, like, just, like, looking around at how they speak about other things. I mean, because it was obviously a crazy thing to say, right? Or, like, a tone-deaf thing to say. How do we characterize it?
Yeah, it's almost like a lawyerly thing to say.
Right.
Like, it's like they're so concerned with covering all the bases that, you know, no one can blame them for having, you know, too liberal of a recommendation. They just want to, like, worst case scenario, want to cover it all.
Right.
Can I read you the most lawyerly thing? A woman was considered to be at risk for an alcohol-exposed pregnancy if in the past month she was not sterile, her partner was not known to be sterile, she had vaginal sex with a male, drank any alcohol, and did not use birth control. It's like, okay. That's a broad category that's in non-human speak, you know?
Fun night out, CDC.
Exactly. What's another way to say that, what you just said?
I almost wondered if somebody in power at the CDC is a secret prohibitionist. I mean, it really did feel like you're saying that you're basically recommending that a giant proportion of the population do not drink at all just in case. And I think there clearly is a real concern with fetal alcohol syndrome. That's a real thing. It's a bloody awful thing. Just tell people, don't get blackout drunk. That's a pretty good advice generally. Don't be an alcoholic. Like, okay, good advice. Thanks. But this is nonsense.
No, but what about just don't? I was thinking, this is what was curious to me. You know, the CDC is not often embroiled in political controversies. Like, they're generally pretty data-based and conservative. We'll say conservative and data-based. There is pretty good data that binge drinking, even in a single instance, can really harm a fetus. It's just a fact, right? Yeah. And then there's another piece of data that half of all pregnancies are unintended. also just a fact. So, like, this would have been controversial enough, but probably would have provoked the correct controversial discussion, mm-hmm. is saying don't binge drink. Like, if you're at risk of pregnancy, don't binge drink. You're harming a fetus. And then people could be like, wait, but like.
Right. But you're never supposed to binge drink. Like, I'm sure the CDC has a whole separate thing about binge drinking that, you know, it just seems like everything about alcohol comes back to don't have more than, you know, whatever it is, 3 drinks in a night or whatever. And that seems particularly acute when you are possibly growing a life inside of you.
Yeah, well, for the people trying to get pregnant, that's a separate category you can yeah. argue about whether the CDC is being overly conservative. There's the whole debate about like whether you should drink when you're pregnant and why countries in which drinking is more common while pregnant don't have lower rates of fetal alcohol syndrome. And is the CDC being too conservative because, in fact, the data doesn't show a tipping point, right? Like there just isn't good evidence for obvious reasons about how many actual drinks you can have. So it's kind of your choice. Whether you want to be like super duper conservative, probably is completely fine if you have a drink every once in a while, as most people in the world do.
Right.
But right. So there just isn't good evidence about that. But
yeah. Like, I mean, why? There's a certain cultural, there's a definite cultural element to this. Like my friends in Britain, I have friends who, you know, had one drink every night when they were pregnant, and they have marvelously successful, you know, 20-something children now. Clearly, like, there's lots of evidence from around the world that light drinking is not problematic necessarily. Yeah. But, you know, that, yeah, it's a very difficult message to give. But culturally in this country, I was surprised to learn that most women don't drink at all in this country when they're pregnant.
Yeah, in Ireland, I don't think they still do, but they would tell you to drink Guinness.
Right.
And just so everyone knows, Gwyneth Paltrow drank Guinness during her pregnancy. So it's Goop approved to drink during your pregnancy. But one thing I think is so interesting is that, okay, we're all angry that the CDC is, I mean, it's like, you know, overreach. They're telling people who aren't even trying to get pregnant that they shouldn't, you know, that they are basically vessels for babies, which is kind of an insulting way to think about a young woman. But then someone does become pregnant and it becomes totally okay to police what yes. they are consuming. And even those of us who are so angry about the CDC sort of police what a woman is doing, you know, like she can't have sushi, she can't, you know, go for a run. And it's just sort of the boundaries of when it's okay to judge what another woman is putting in her body and when it is not are, you know, are in an interesting place, let's say.
Hannah, you're the only one of us who has had a baby, and you've done it 3 times.
Or 3.
Like, did you feel constantly policed when you were, at least when you were showing?
I take none of it seriously. I mean, that is my problem. I'm like at the way far, like if I actually publicly admit how little my children, no, I'm not even going to say it. Because I really am not a good example here. I mean, when I read the CDC, like I read the CDC recommendations about germs while pregnancy if you have another child. And it's like, if you're pregnant when kissing a child, you know, lots of people have 2 kids. So this would mean like you're pregnant, you have a first kid. Try not to exchange saliva with that child or touch their food or put anything that they had in their mouth in your mouth. Like the degree to which this is massively unrealistic when you have 2 children. And I was thinking, oh, the CDC is like my friend. I will also not say her name. Let's call her Frida. There's like a couple of these in every mother circle who are like they read all the data and they draw the line. Absolutely. Like everything is a slippery slope. If you're making cake, you must never touch the batter. You know, the kid has to sit in a car seat until they're 40 years old. Like that mom is who the CDC is, you know, and maybe that's their job. And I don't take that mom so seriously. So maybe I won't take the CDC so seriously. Yeah, you feel like when you read what to expect when you're expecting, it does make you furious. Like the food section of what to expect when you're expecting, you know, if you put, you know, when you put that, I remember this sentence. It's like when you put the, you know, when you put that fork full of cake towards your mouth, think twice. Are you doing it for your own pleasure or is it good for your baby? And it's like, oh, screw God. You. Like I weigh like 500 pounds. I'm exhausted. My pleasures have been reduced to nothing and I'm eating a cake, you bastard.
Next time, now I know that. Next time I see a pregnant woman, I'm going to be like, would you like some cake?
Right. Exactly. So, yes, you do feel. But it is a public space. Like, listen to that. Like the thing I read at the beginning of the show A woman was considered to be at risk for an alcohol-exposed pregnancy. Now, they're making a concession. You mean a baby that's exposed to fetal alcohol syndrome? It's like, who's being exposed to what? You know, are you worried about the woman or are you worried about the baby? Like, it is a complicated situation because you are. I mean, imagine if you had a baby with fetal alcohol syndrome. It's the one thing that's like completely your fault, you know?
Yeah.
And completely preventable if you hadn't been drinking so much.
Yeah.
It's very clear.
I've been thinking about this in relationship to the Zika virus that's happening in Brazil.
Well, and many other places.
Yeah. But the CDC also issued somewhat concurrently with the alcohol warning, a warning to pregnant women not to travel to places that could be affected by the Zika virus. And, you know, obviously no outrage about that. And you know, some of that is just because it's a very scary thing that we don't understand much about yet. But also, you know, Zika is not your fault and drinking is your fault.
Right. Yeah. Did you, like, Hope Solo said that she wasn't sure she wanted to play in the Olympics. She's U.S. soccer player because of the Zika virus. And she said it's just irresponsible to expose your baby to that kind of potential harm. And I wondered about that. Like, we didn't have a feminist angry reaction to that. And is that, I guess that's what you're saying. Nobody's blaming you. It doesn't have that blame factor. And then I thought, is it because it's very concrete? Like, they've described the fetal alcohol syndrome symptoms seem a little vaguer, whereas the Zika virus is so concrete. What happens to the fetus? I wasn't sure.
Yeah, I don't know how to put this, but it really just is in the air. And I suppose if you think about it hard enough, it would scare you. I
mean, but does it scare you, Noreen? Like, would you ever,
I'm
talking about this topic. Would you, and then you having your fourth drink, would you ever think like, oh, maybe I don't know if I should do it. Like, would it ever pop into your head?
Well, I feel like once you've had your fourth drink, you're already making some bad decisions.
Nothing's in your head.
Which, like, to be fair, the CDC does have a point. Like, mm-hmm, alcohol mm-hmm. does lead to bad decision making. Mm-hmm. You know, that's been something we've talked about in context of campus rape. But
I guess that's the thing, isn't it, though? It's that no alcohol at all. I mean, even if they said one drink, you would be like, oh, you're policing us. But it would seem kind of reasonable. It's the don't drink at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's that denial. And it's that you people over there, you're the ones who can't have it. And it always seems to be women who can't have things.
Totally.
And, you know, alcohol is, I mean, I love it, don't get me wrong, but it is pretty bad stuff. I mean, you could also see, like, people, and since I don't drive, I don't know really how people police themselves with that. Like, probably more than one drink and driving is dangerous, right? So, I mean, should you also say, but you know what? You shouldn't drink at all if you're going to drive. I mean, there seems to be some kind of similar parallel that could have been drawn, but I don't hear people making sort of pronouncements like that.
Or the parallel for men. Like someone, Chris Gigante, somebody redid the CDC chart, the women chart for men. Drinking too much can have many risks for men. Like for any man with violent tendencies, aggression, domestic violence, assault. Drinking too much for men. It's like just did the exact same CDC infographic, but just substituted men for women. It's pretty compelling.
Yeah.
Okay.
We sound like prohibitionists.
No drink. That's where we've landed, right?
Yeah.
No drinking. Nobody, listeners.
I'm going to disagree with that one.
Don't drink.
Paternalism good, drinking bad.
Exactly. All right, let's move on to our final topic, Samantha Bee. But before we do that, let's thank our next sponsor.
This week, the XX Gabfest is sponsored by Headspace. Let's be honest, most of our problems start with your mind. Fear, anger, stress, anxiety, depression, sleeplessness. Why am I describing my own life? They all begin in your head, but they can wreck your life. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can make a major difference in just 10 minutes a day. That change can come through guided meditation with the new Headspace app. Headspace is meditation made simple. It's guided meditations that you listen to whenever you want, wherever you want, right on your phone, computer, or tablet. Meditation is rooted in thousands of years of tradition, with thousands of scientific studies that show its positive effects, like improving focus and relationship harmony, and decreasing anxiety and stress. Join more than 4 million users already getting some Headspace for free right now. You can download the free Headspace app and begin their Take 10 program for 10 days of guided meditation at headspace.com/XX. The Headspace Take 10 program is a 100% free way to experience the benefits of meditation in your busy modern life. Train your mind for a healthier, less stressed life. Start your free trial today at headspace.com/XX. That's headspace.com/XX. Hannah, back to you.
Okay, on to our next topic, Samantha Bee. She had her late night debut this week. Is she the only woman? Is that right? Is she the only woman on late night TV?
Chelsea Handler had a late night show, but she's been off the air for a while. And I have to say, technically speaking, in the TV rules, it's not technically late night at 10:30, but clearly in practice it is.
And she's only on once a week.
She's on once a week. She's not a nightly show.
Yeah. Anyway, I knew that was coming, so I didn't want to just like, I knew June would set me straight on some aspect of that. Samantha Bee is a female at 10:30 who appears on television weekly, and we watched her debut this week. It got, I would say, pretty much universal praise because it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It was funny.
It was funny.
Yeah. So does one of you want to say how it started? Because I actually found that interesting, the kind of, this is the only space we're allowed to talk about feminist things on TV is like serious, but ironic. That's like a space that exists now.
The very first scene in the tease of Full Frontal with Samantha Bee was her at a press conference where the press were just asking her many times basically the same question, which was, what's it like to be on late night as a woman? What's it like to be a host as a woman? How should I as a man relate to your show as a woman? And so it was really just that sort of comment on the thing that we're about to talk about, like, what's it like to have a show that's a late night comedy show as a woman?
Yeah, because it probably feels stupid to her because she's been working on, she works for Jon Stewart for so many years. To her, it's not a big deal, right?
Yeah, I guess. But also, like, you know what? She was passed over for The Daily Show.
Yeah.
And watching this show versus the Trevor Noah version of The Daily Show, I've got to say that was a crime, you know? Like, I think that, and we, New York Magazine had ran an interview that Rebecca Traister did with her in which she said, you know, there are people who just don't like the way my voice sounds, you know, my shrill voice yelling in their ears. And, you know, there are just ways, like she does have a higher pitched voice. She is definitely, you know, I actually listened to Samantha Bee and Hillary Clinton's speech back to back, and they just have very different, they're speaking just literally different registers. So it did strike me. And there are people maybe for whom that will bug them, like sexist assholes, but it will bug them because they're used to hearing the Jimmys or they're used to hearing Jon Stewart or just someone speaking in a deeper register or looking a different way.
She feels very much herself. Like in place, she actually did a XX show a few years ago, a live show with us, which was really, really funny, in which we talked about Spanx, among other things.
And her husband wears them. Do you remember that? That was my favorite part.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Anyway, so but she felt very much herself, like very comfortable. Like she like you got this sense of a distinct late night personality.
Mm-hmm. You know what? Let's talk about something that she mentioned in a interview with Entertainment Weekly, which was kind of related to the question of her being passed over for The Daily Show when Jon Stewart retired. You know, she was asked the question, you know, did you feel bad her husband, you know, called them out for passing her over? But she said she was glad, or I don't know if that was her exact word, but that, you know, doing a show that's once a week is so much more family friendly than weekly. I imagine it's also easier. But like, did that strike you as something that's true? That's just like a justification for something that, hey, what you're going to do, or both? I actually think it's both. I actually think it is a better quality of life to do a weekly show. It's also a much smaller paycheck. Like, how did you guys react to that? Because it really like screamed out at me and I got it, but it also felt kind of sad.
I think that's it's got to be both, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they do have young kids and that is a real thing. But also, you know, yeah, she got passed
over. My overwhelming feeling watching the show this week was that this should be a daily show. Like, it has the feel and pace of a daily show. The level of joking is daily show. Its engagement with the news was very daily feeling. Like, it just feels like a show that should happen every day and be commenting on the news and be just like Jon Stewart. I get why her life makes that really, really hard to do, but it felt like it was conceived of as a daily show.
I have a feeling that that was the very specifically about what was going on this week in New Hampshire and the debate. I think that because, you know, they kept putting in ads for the show during the show, which I have to think, I mean, partly it's because, you know, this is the big TBS and TNT and all the Turner networks are doing this big, you know, they're completely transforming right now. And this show and other comedies are a big part of that. But I had a feeling that we're also trying to show us the kind of bits that they would normally do. I mean, we've now seen that interview with the woman about how the VA can't handle its female veterans very well. Like, they keep showing that, I think, to remind us that, yeah, right now, this week, it's right on the news and it's just something that happened yesterday. But typically we'll have these more, you know, kind of long-term pieces, more, not exactly evergreen, but just a little bit less pegged to the right now, this second kind of newsy things.
Although I have to say, as a viewer, I don't like that stuff as much.
Yeah, me too.
Like, the high concept often doesn't pay off for me. And I'm not a particularly huge fan of John Oliver's show, even though I know he's sort of, he's mastered that kind of art. What I like are just the really funny, like, picking off the new, the classic Daily Show thing, you know, just sending up the ridiculousness of what is happening, like, in the straight ahead news cycle.
Well, let's listen to a bit of her on the first episode.
Wednesday night, the Democrats met for a town hall where Bernie Sanders, dressed in what appears to be the Democratic Party's big tent, played up his image of blustery old grandpa living off Social Security checks and stolen sugar packets.
I have a small Chevrolet. It is one of the smallest Chevys that they make.
With no engine, because engines are for one percenters. Bernie still drives the first car he ever got. Sorry, I meant to say the first car. But Hillary wanted us to know that she's also just folks.
This is hard for me. You know, I never thought I'd be standing on a stage here asking people to vote for me for president.
Oh, fuck off. Me? President? Oh, golly gumdrops. I don't know if little old me could ever...
Yes! Anoint me your god! What more do you people want from me?
Yeah, she's kind of gonzo. Like, she's very, very... That was a really honest thing to say. Oh, fuck off, Hillary Clinton.
Right. You know? And there's this whole sense that the campaign is to parody itself for late. Like, you couldn't squeeze good comedy out of it because it was so absurd that you didn't really need the comedy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I kind of thought she made that seem untrue.
Yeah, totally. She was so much sharper than any of the other satire I've seen so far. Although I haven't really been watching the SNL stuff.
No.
I laughed really hard at the Bernie finger shake complex.
Yes. Yes. Okay, that was so funny.
He was flagging down
thing.
The waitress.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So
right.
good.
Right. Yeah. So one interesting aspect is that the female comedians, it's kind of a moment of female comedians, right? But the ones who are sort of taking up the most airspace, most prominently Amy Schumer, are in many ways, their subject is the female condition. And Samantha Bee certainly talks, like, she makes jokes about being a woman, about the way people treat women. She's certainly, like, obviously a feminist, but she's doing comedy that's much broader than that, or her subject is much broader than that. And I think that'll be interesting to see how that is received. Like, does she get categorized as, you know, part of this great moment of female comedians, or because she's not taking as her subject primarily sexism, will she be taken in a different way?
She doesn't shy away from sexism, though. I mean,
no.
One of her regular bits, I guess, will be whatever she called it, the elected paperweight of the year or something, where she mocks an elected official. And she was absolutely banged to rights. She had this, you know, state senator from Michigan who had a doltish sexist bill about, you know, the way that women should dress. And she called him out absolutely about his sexism, and it was fantastic, and it really did feel different, and I just found that so refreshing and kind of exciting.
Yeah, it was like in the balance. It's the percentage, right? Yeah. It was like 6% feminist comedy and the rest just broad political comedy. And I also like the way she started the show, like, I've been sitting here waiting to make fun of these guys in the best campaign ever, that I really identified with her about that. It's like she'd just watching her sit in her living room just like wanting to take it all on, you know?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we love you. Full Frontal with Sam B. We're excited to see where it goes. It's a weekly late night political show on TBS that debuted this week on Monday, hosted by the former Daily Show correspondent. Go onto our Facebook page and tell us what you think of it. Now we'll move on to our recommendations. But before we do that, let's thank our final sponsor.
This week, the XX Gabfest is also sponsored by HelloFresh, the leading meal delivery kit service. So HelloFresh is the meal kit delivery service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices, that would be me despite my advanced age, to seasoned home cooks short on time. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. When you get the little boxes, it depends on what the thing is. If it's something that's kind of tricky to cut up, like, well, if you're lame like me, like a butternut squash, that might come already diced, but an onion, you're going to get an onion and you're expected to cut that up yourself. But garlic would come as a clove of garlic, that kind of thing. So it's very carefully prepared and you get a lot of assistance, but you also kind of get the challenge of cooking. So not only are you saving food waste, but you're also getting food that is healthy. HelloFresh employs a full-time registered dietitian who reviews each recipe to ensure that it is nutritionally balanced. And to top it all off, every meal kit is delivered to your doorstep in a special insulated box for free. And there is a special offer for listeners of the XX Gabfest. If you would like $35 off your first week of deliveries, visit HelloFresh.com and enter promo code XX when you subscribe. Hannah, back to you.
All right. Recommendations. Noreen, on you.
So I want to recommend a show that I got really sucked into this winter, which June is not on board with. But I fell in love with The Affair on Showtime, which is Dominic West, and Maura Tierney is phenomenal.
Ruth Wilson
is the woman whose accent I cannot stand. She's so bad at doing an American accent, and yet it doesn't totally ruin the show for me. But the idea is that it's, you know, sort of different perspectives on this affair. In the first season, it's the man and the woman who are involved and how their accounts differ. And in the second season, it widens out to their spouses, and including an amazing Maura Tierney storyline. And it's just sort of like... it's a lot more interesting than I thought it would be. The woman who is the showrunner, or maybe the does the script, is sort of a honored young playwright. She's very, very smart, obviously.
She's also the woman behind In Treatment, which was
amazing. I didn't realize that. Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's soapy, and I will, you know, never apologize for my love of soap, but it's also unexpectedly smart and sucks you in. So if you haven't yet watched The Affair, do it. It's really good.
I really want to watch it. Do you watch Downton Abbey? I'm just trying to check. If you're a Downton Abbey person, maybe I won't watch The Affair.
I did the first couple seasons, and then it sort of lost me. So I would say It's not that kind of soap. The first season's not that great. You got to kind of push through the first half of the first season, and then it really sucks you in. But it does a good job. I think it's kind of a show about class just as much as anything. I don't know. Watch it and let's meet back here.
I really want. Yeah, let's do it. I that or Occupied. Which one should I watch? I feel like Occupied's like the boy thing I could watch next. You know, it's
that's a show about
Norwegian.
Climate control.
Yes, no, it's not a show about climate control. It's like,
that's how it's been pitched by everyone.
Going to watch that. Sorry.
David is so into that. It's like this Norwegian show about Norway being occupied by Russia, and he says it's really amazing. So that's like so boy. I could either watch that or The Affair. Maybe I'll watch The Affair. I'll be with Noreen.
I know a lot of couples who watch The Affair together, which is so weird. But that, you know, it seems like fun for both parties.
That's actually the reason I don't want to watch. I don't watch The Affair because that seems creepy. But now that my husband is away, I have the week, I can do it. All right. I want the listeners to make this decision for me. If you think that I should watch The Affair, go onto the Facebook page or tweet at us and say, watch The Affair or watch Occupied. And then I'll make my decision. I need more help. All right, I'm going to go highbrow here. I'm reading a novel which I really, really, really love. It's called The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich. And it's about, it takes place on a Native American reservation. It's told from the point of view of a boy, a young boy whose mother is attacked, sexually attacked, and kind of what he finds out and how his life changes. I really, really love it. I'm not quite done with it yet, but I think it's fantastic. Okay, June.
So last Friday, I went to see Janis Ian perform at the Lincoln Center. And this was kind of the reason I went, even though the tickets were kind of pricey. It was because I used to love her when I was, of course, 17, when I was a teenager. And I just had memories of having chosen not to see people who I used to really like. And, you know, who knows how long people tour. And so I just like, okay, I liked her so much when I was young, I've got to go see her. And first of all, she was amazing. But what struck me was I hadn't listened to a lot of the songs for maybe 30 years. And I could have sung along. I didn't, I promise you. But like, it was astonishing to me how like songs that you did listen to over and over and over again when you were young, like they're there at the back of your brain. And so I guess the thing that I want to endorse, first of all, is Janis Ian is a remarkable musician and a great songwriter, but also maybe just the act of going back and listening to the things that you that were really important to you and that you, you know, listened to on constant repeat when you were young, and just to see, you know, if you can still sing along and if you still like them and if you how the sort of emotion of it seems to you now, because I really enjoyed doing that.
Wait, June, you're going to kill me, but what Janis Ian songs might I know?
So the most famous one is At 17, which is a sort of a soppy song about a unattractive 17-year-old talking about or unpopular. What she said is that she is like the bard of the depressing song, and that's really true. She is kind of about, you know, people on the outside of circles, people who've been ditched. They're not always the most uplifting songs, but she's really an amazing musician. And, you know, the truth is that she really hasn't had much of a recording career since the 80s. Now she's mostly a songwriter, but she's really a fantastic performer.
Cool.
Jealous. Okay, well, that's all we got today. Thanks. That's all we got. That was a lot. We got some politics, some music, some TV. I mean, we just covered it all. Some science-ish.
Ish. Adjacent. Science adjacent.
Thanks to our fabulous producer, Anne Hepperman, to the executive producer of Slate Podcast, Steve Lichtai, Andy Bowers, the chief content officer of the Panoply Network, and our intern is Shiva Bayat, who joined us on the show this week. Thank you, Shiva. The XX Gabfest is part of the Panoply Network. You can check out our entire roster at itunes.com/panoply. Show page for more information about this show is at slate.com/XX. Facebook page to start a conversation, you know, just about me and tell me what TV to watch. That's facebook.com/XXGabFest. Email XXGabFest@slate.com. And you can subscribe on iTunes. By the way, I forgot to thank Darby Worley for doing all that research for us on Samantha Bee. That was really just the most useful email we've gotten. He's like, why don't you talk about, or I don't know if it's a he or she actually, talk about Samantha Bee. And here's all the research about Samantha Bee. That was cool. So anyway, thank you, Darby. Please join us in a couple of weeks for June and Noreen. I'm Hannah Rosen.
I learned the truth at 17, that love was meant for beauty queens and high school girls with clear skin smiles who married young and then retired.